Hey everybody, I'm a little wooden boy.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time. It's Del Toro time, and we're all little wooden boys today. And you know we're all little wooden boys because we'll all die one day.
Yep.
And that's the lesson of today's movie, this discussion. We went to the movies!
We did. It was very fun.
Yes. We went to the movies. We got popcorn.
I got Mike and Ike's and water as well.
Uh-huh. We sat in a movie theater with only one other group.
And they left.
And they left! It was a Christmas miracle. There was a family of three adults and two small children in the row behind us, or, you know, in the very back row. Mm-hmm. And I'd say they left probably like 20 minutes before the end of the movie.
Yep.
Yeah. Just when things were just about to, I was going to say get resolved, but they're not resolved. Just things were getting pretty bad, and then they just left. They didn't make a fuss or anything.
No.
No.
No, I think some of them left before that, because I only saw two people walking out at that time.
They left in one group. Two adults and a child left first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the other group just like left like a minute later. I think you just missed the first group.
Okay.
But yeah, they left in waves. And I just think it was one of those situations where the kids were probably bored and or like weirded out.
Mm-hmm.
So they flew. But what movie are we talking about?
Pinocchio.
Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Not Walt Disney's Pinocchio live action.
No.
And not the Pauly Shore movie.
Nope.
Which, hilariously enough, Guillermo del Toro brings up in multiple interviews across the internet, because people keep saying, you're one of two Pinocchio movies coming out this year. To which he responds, three Pinocchio movies, because they always leave out the Pauly Shore one. Father, I want to be a real wooden boy.
Well, I'm not seeing that one.
We're not seeing that. Or maybe we are seeing.
Nope. I refuse.
Part of me wanted to. There is this masochistic part of me that wants to do a Pinocchio cast where we cover. And by we, I mean me and someone else, because you clearly would never do this. Cover the book Pinocchio. All the weird unofficial sequels to the Pinocchio book, which are, there's probably as many unofficial Pinocchio sequels as there are unofficial Alice in Wonderland sequels. And then just every adaptation of Pinocchio, because there's so many Pinocchios in this world. And it would be a masochistic undertaking because I hate almost all of them.
You know what? I would do that, actually.
We would be insane by the end of that.
Yep. I'd get like one of those conspiracy theory boards for my backdrop and just start connecting dots.
Long about the like 11th donkey transformation sequence, I would just be like, I'm done. Not even the weird Pee-wee Herman starring, who was it? I can't think of her name. The woman from The Shining. What is her name? The woman who played Wendy in The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of her name. I keep wanting to say Sherry Lewis, but that's not it. She's the one who had the lamb puppet. Fairy Tale Theater. She had the Fairy Tale Theater show, and she did a Pinocchio with Paul Rubens as Pinocchio, and it's
Shelley Duvall.
Shelley Duvall. Thank you. Not Sherry Lewis. Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater. Yeah, the Pinocchio. None of the. I am on record on this show as being not a Pinocchio fan.
Neither of us are Pinocchio fans. We've talked in depth about how much we hate that story.
And yet, we went to see a Pinocchio. We paid money to see a Pinocchio because he was done by our boy, Guillermo del Toro.
Yep.
What I would like to do for this episode is do a non-spoilery, like, sort of just overview, like review a little bit, like just sort of our general feelings, and then launch into spoilers since it's such a new movie.
Yeah.
And it hasn't even hit streaming yet. So don't worry, we'll announce when spoilers are coming, because I mean, clearly it's Pinocchio, so you know it's about a little wooden boy.
But there's a lot that happens.
Yeah, there's stuff that happens, and then there's the ending, which I do want to discuss, but we will get into that. So answer my question. What is Pinocchio? Not the movie, but what to you is just the essence of Pinocchio?
Annoying.
No, seriously. Like,
no, I hated Pinocchio when I was younger.
I guess I mean culturally. What does Pinocchio mean? Like when people think of Pinocchio.
Pinocchio is one of those weird, like, moral tales that's not really a moral tale.
Yeah.
People use it as, like, a lesson, but it's not really.
It's really a story about do as you're told and obey your parents. But what are some of the elements of the story that you tend to, like, even if you've never seen Pinocchio, people think of as part of Pinocchio?
When he lies, his nose grows.
When he lies, his nose grows.
He's a wooden puppet who thinks he's a real boy or wants to be a real boy.
Wooden puppet wants to be a real boy. He has a
cricket.
Yep, he has a cricket. Who tends to turn him into a living...
The blue fairy.
There's a blue fairy.
Mm-hmm.
Usually there's some kind of, like, wicked marionettist.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the mix.
There's an old man usually as well.
Yeah. A Geppetto?
Yeah. There's an old man.
There's usually something of a Geppetto in the mix.
Yeah.
So you've got these elements that are the sort of the spine of Pinocchio. And as we've talked about, they aren't necessarily the spine of the original stories.
Mm-hmm.
Pinocchio wanting to be a real boy isn't part of the original story until the very end. The blue fairy is in the original story, but she's kind of in and out and more just sort of another moral arbiter. The cricket gets killed in his first scene, and he shows up as a ghost later on. things that, like, we tend to latch on to as the main element. And the nose growing is, like, it happens, like, once, maybe twice in the story, but it's just another weird thing that happens.
Yeah.
There tend to be things in the shorts, in the original stories that have sort of bled into popular culture that actually aren't as big a deal as we think they are, mostly because of Walt Disney.
Yeah.
And then later adaptations.
The story of Pinocchio in its original form doesn't matter.
Hey, tell that to the Italians. I mean, the Italians love them a Pinocchio.
Whatever.
I'm talking
about in pop culture.
But in international popular culture, I'm sure they love him in Japan. They love everything in Japan. They love Les Mis in Japan. And I know there's been Japanese animes of Pinocchio.
Yeah. Okay, we're Americans, so the entire world is America to us. That's just how this works, okay?
You hear that, world?
In America, or in the U.S., Walt Disney's Pinocchio is just the story of Pinocchio. He pulled a Madea, basically.
He pulled a Madea? What did he mean he pulled a Madea?
The original Madea story doesn't end with her killing her children, but then it was rewritten into a play form, and that became the traditional story.
That's the one everyone knows.
Yeah.
The theatrical presentation.
Yep.
Yeah. And I would say that Walt Disney's Pinocchio has become kind of the platonic ideal of Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
Because they took a sort of sprawling, road trippy story that stalls out in the middle and then kind of, like, shoehorns in a meaning at the end and kind of just goes all over the place, repeats itself a lot because it was released episodically. And I think Disney, like, they compacted it into a coherent tale that makes a lot of sense, has a beginning and a middle and an end, has motivations. And it was just kind of like, you know what, if you need a Pinocchio, and to the degree that, like, most adaptations of Pinocchio adapt the Disney version or a variation on it rather than going back completely to the source material.
Yep. Just like Madea.
Just like Madea. And just like Madea, someone puts on a robe that burns them to death. I don't remember what happens in Madea. Doesn't that happen in Madea?
Yeah.
Someone gets like, oh, what a nice robe. It's a wedding present. And they put it on and it's like, I'm on fire now because it's a robe that makes you on fire.
Yeah, because Madea is a sorcerer.
Yeah. There's a lot of awesome stuff in Madea.
Medea is a good story. Anyways.
Yeah. For some reason, I always confuse Medea with Hedda Gabler, which is not the same story. But I tend to think of, like, an actress who plays Medea will probably also play Hedda Gabler. Like, it's like two incredibly strong women who do, like, drastic things.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not talking about Medea.
Who's to say Pinocchio isn't just a retelling of Medea?
Pinocchio, yes. Well, I would go so far, because as far as this movie is concerned, Pinocchio is just a retelling of the story of Jesus Christ, also Frankenstein, and maybe a little bit Child's Play's Chucky. So this is and also kind of like a weird, like, wood elemental. Like, he's a little inhuman, is, I guess, the point I'm making.
Yeah.
So non-spoilery going in, let's take a look at Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, the Pinocchio, Pinocchio boy. Boy Pinocchio, wooden man, wooden boy.
Pinocchio.
Based on The Adventures of Pinocchio by Carlo Collodi. Where to begin? This isn't the Bobby Zemeckis one. Nope. This is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. It's a stop motion. It's co-directed with Mark Gustafson, who this is Mark Gustafson's first feature film. And he does not even have his own Wikipedia page.
Or Baroni. Well, he's going to after this movie gets released on streaming.
Yes, because before this, all of his credits, and they aren't many. He did like the California Raisin Show. He did a claymation Easter. He worked for Will Vinton, basically, who did the California Raisins, did a lot of claymation in the 80s and 90s. He worked on the PJs. He did some short films, but Guillermo del Toro brought him on basically mm-hmm. just because he's like, I need someone who's worked in this medium a lot. And this guy's got the chops, so come on board. And he came on board, and I guess it worked.
Yeah. Hey, we should probably start by saying we both liked this movie, right?
We both liked this movie. So right off the bat, we both liked this movie. You liked it, I believe, more immediately than I did.
Yeah.
Like, I think you were immediately on board with it. It took me a while. It had to win me over.
Mm-hmm.
Guillermo del Toro's been trying to get this movie made since 2005, since right after Pan's Labyrinth. He was like, I want to do this. Apparently, the first movie he ever tried to make was a stop-motion animated film before Kronos.
Yeah.
He started up a company that for 10 years, he had a special effects and stop-motion company. He said he was teaching animation in high school at the age of 17 to other kids. So mm-hmm. he has an animation background. We need to remember that.
Yeah.
So his girlfriend and his brother built over 100 puppets to make this movie. They designed them, they'd sculpted them, they started building sets, and they did one day of photography. And then while they were on break, like for dinner, like literally like, let's go eat, mm-hmm. They got burglarized. And because there wasn't anything for the burglars to steal, the burglars crushed all their puppets and defecated all over the floor. And that was the end of his stop-motion animation movie. And then he made Kronos. Then he produced Book of Life, which we loved.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another, like, dive into, you know, he didn't direct it.
Do Kronos and then immediately produce Book of Life, which is what
Years later, he produced Book of Life. That was his other, like, stop-motion thing. And clearly he's done a ton of animation, like, as a producer and a writer and a director. But yeah, he's been trying to get... Oh, since 2004, he was trying to get this off the ground.
Bro.
In 2008, he shopped it around. No one was interested. And then, you know, 16 years later, he finally has seen it. But he's wanted to make Pinocchio since he was a kid. And he's wanted to make this specific Pinocchio since he was a kid. Like, he knew how he wanted it told and what he wanted the point of view to be. So, yeah.
Good job, Guillermo del Toro.
Good job. So, who is this movie for right off the bat?
Not children.
Yeah. Not kids. This is not a kids movie.
No. I feel like people get too caught up in like the ratings of movies to like judge what movies are meant for.
Right.
Like PG movies are meant for kids. PG movies are just ones that don't have swearing and like copious amounts of drugs in them.
Yeah, too much blood.
Yeah. Like a PG movie isn't just meant for children, and I don't know, I think the rating system is
It's screwed up,
yeah.
Yeah. So the poster for this movie is Pinocchio's face. He's looking up. His nose is growing. It's got like branches and leaves. And the cricket is standing on the branch playing the violin. And it's very warmly lit. And it says Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio from the visionary director of Pan's Labyrinth and The Shape of Water. But if you looked at this poster and you were a parent, it looks like a children's movie.
Until you read Pan's Labyrinth and The Shape of Water.
Okay, but like you're still looking at this poster and you're like, okay, it's a cute little puppet face because the puppet is very adorable. It's got a cute little cartoon cricket up there playing the violin.
It's the way that animated movies are advertised has always been considered for kids.
Right. And this doesn't, I don't think this goes, I don't think that the advertising for this goes far enough to saying this isn't a movie for like 6-year-olds.
Yeah.
Because it looks adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a movie for 6-year-olds.
No, it's not.
It's not a movie for 8-year-olds. Not
I think like 10.
Yeah, maybe 10 and up. But even then, mm-hmm. like, there's so much to it that I always say about Deep in Bear Country, my Berenstain Bear show. I always say it's not child inappropriate, but it's probably not child interesting.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that a kid will be, like, upset about, but they probably will get bored if they tried to listen to my show. And I would say, I think that might be what happened in the showing we went to.
I think there might be some things in this movie kids might get a little upset about.
Maybe a little, but I remember when I was a kid and I would watch movies that had not, because the imagery in this movie isn't like violent. Like, you don't see blood. You don't see, even like when someone, there's a scene where a character is getting beaten, you don't see them getting beaten. You just see the arm go up and you hear it. When I was a kid and that would happen in movies, it wouldn't really faze me. It was more directly scary things because I didn't really understand the implications behind it.
Right.
I think what the kids might respond negatively to is just the intense emotion of this movie.
It like, is a very intense movie.
Yeah. Like, just from a, what is happening? It's not whimsical.
There's music.
There's some music, but the music can be very, like, dissonant and, like, weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of death
in
this
movie. Maybe I was just
a
weird kid.
Well, I showed you a lot of crap.
I mean, to be fair, the cartoons that I grew up on were Spirited Away and Princess Mononoke.
You watched a lot of, like, dark stuff. I don't know. There's just something about this where I'm like, we left the movie and I was like, I have no idea who this movie is intended for. Like,
I mean, I walked in knowing it wasn't intended for kids, just instinctually,
mm-hmm.
because, I don't know, I guess I just was like, there's no way Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio is going to be intended for the normal age range of Pinocchio watchers.
But I think of, like, so I saw the movie Wendell and Wild, which is another mm-hmm. stop-motion animation movie that came out this year, premiered on Netflix, directed by Henry Selick. Watched it with Mitzi, who's 11. And she enjoyed it. I was watching it and I was like, it skews very dark.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
It has a huge screed against the prison industrial complex mm-hmm. and the way children from lower incomes are set up to fail so that they can feed the prison industrial complex. It's amazing that it had that message. I never felt that it was boring to Mitzi because it was still mm-hmm. a very kid movie. I could present it all this in the frame of a kid's movie, even though it involved the underworld, death, destruction, just like all this. This movie is just achingly sad in places, but like from an adult perspective.
Yeah.
Like almost like unbearably sad at times.
I think that there's parts of this movie that would be entertaining for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that, like, there's a lot of action happening.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of cool things to look at.
It is. It's also long.
It is long.
It's close to 2 hours, which might be stretching it for some kids. Just considering that the color palette of this is so muted, the hijinks aren't wacky.
There's some wacky hijinks in there.
But then they're counterbalanced by, like, an extended scene of an old man weeping into his palms. Like,
that's true.
If you're a fan of old men crying, this is the movie for you. Also,
this is definitely a Guillermo del Toro movie, though.
Also, please see somebody.
Yeah. Go get help, please.
So I want to run down the cast real quick, just because it's small, but it's a powerful cast. So we have little Gregory Mann as Pinocchio, who does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the perfect balance of like innocent and like mischievous.
Yeah.
We have Ewan McGregor as Sebastian J. Cricket.
Who's awesome.
Yeah, he does a really good job.
It's a fun song.
They definitely are like, we're just taking Jiminy Cricket and we're just changing his name, period. Like, this is not the Cricket from the book. This is Jiminy Cricket. He even, like, kind of becomes Pinocchio's conscience at the guidance.
He becomes his heart.
Yeah, at the guidance of the movie's version of the fairy.
I do prefer this cricket to Jiminy Cricket in the Pinocchio movie from Disney, though.
Don't make me do it.
I don't like that cricket.
Don't make me do it.
What are you going to do? Oh, you're going to sing a song?
I'm no fool, no siree. I'm going to live to be 103. I play safe for you and me.
I always found that character so irritating.
Oh, I grew up loving Jiminy Cricket. I mean, Ewan McGregor's cricket could eat him for lunch, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, Ewan McGregor does a great job. The appropriate amount, I think, of pathos and, like, humor.
He has a mustache.
Yeah, he's got a little cricket mustache. And the way that his, like, front is drawn, like, developed, looks kind of like he has boobs, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
He does kind of look like he has boobs, but that's not a minus. That's a plus.
He's a cricket. What do crickets usually look like?
They don't usually stand on their hind legs. They don't have boobs.
I want to know what cricket looks like.
You don't know what a cricket looks like. I love thinking that you don't actually know what a cricket looks like.
I know what a cricket looks like. I've never looked at the underbelly of a cricket. Forgive me.
The underbelly of a cricket, the Pinocchio story. Crickets. Are you searching cricket's underbelly?
I am, yeah.
And what have you found?
They do not usually look like they have boobs.
So you heard it here first. Crickets don't usually look like they have boobs.
I was just wondering if they were like trying to do an anatomically correct cricket.
With a mustache.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Just you never know, okay? Leave me alone.
So the performance of the movie, the performance that carries the entire film is David Bradley as Geppetto.
Mm-hmm.
David Bradley, who everyone knows, you either know him as Filch from the Harry Potter movies, you know him as Walder Frey from Game of Thrones, you know him as Abraham Satrakian from The Strain, you know him as Merlin from Guillermo del Toro's Tales of Arcadia, you know him from his roles in the Cornetto trilogy movies, you know him from playing the first Doctor in all the newer Doctor Who things, you know David Bradley. He's an old man, he's a phenomenal actor, and I'm so happy that this movie just let him be the lead. That yeah. He's just the lead in this movie. He's Geppetto, he is phenomenal, he is emotional and stern and angry and just so good.
He is. And just he's so funny good. When it's funny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because this is a hard role to play.
Yeah, especially in this movie.
Especially this movie, but like I'm thinking of like Geppettos of our lives, and Geppetto is like in the new movie from Disney this year. Tom Hanks played Geppetto, and he played him with a broad Italian accent, kind of as a goof, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Drew Carey, of Drew Carey show fame. Played Geppetto in the Disney musical Geppetto. That's about Geppetto.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not good. I mean, he did okay, but he wasn't Geppetto. What's his face? Who played Pinocchio in Pinocchio? What's his name? The guy who played
Pinocchio in Pinocchio?
No, the guy who played Pinocchio in his own Pinocchio. What's his name? The Italian guy. Who's the Italian guy who played Pinocchio? Roberto Benigni. Roberto Benigni made Pinocchio in 2002, and he played Pinocchio. But he was like in his like 50s or whatever when he made it, or his 40s.
Why are we talking about who's playing Pinocchio? I thought we were talking about
because then in 2019 there was a new Italian live action Pinocchio made, and Roberto Benigni played Geppetto, and he was phenomenal as Geppetto. That's actually a really good Pinocchio movie. It's just live action. A little boy plays Pinocchio in makeup, and it's wild, and it's very faithful to the book. So it works. It's probably one of my favorite Pinocchios. It's creepy enough. It's weird. Very Italian movie. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is an Italian story, so that would make sense.
But David Bradley plays a Geppetto who is very angry through much of the early part of the film.
Well, yeah.
And it could be overwhelming, but it's not. He just does a good job.
Yeah. He's there's a good balance of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie is very good at balancing itself.
Yeah. I mean, depending on what you're looking for, it could probably be a little much if you're not looking for it. I've seen the other theatrical poster for this, which is the Pinocchio going through doors and seeing one of the like weird afterlife spirits standing behind it, and you just see Pinocchio's shadow. Still kind of looks like it could be a family film, so that's weird. In any case,
Well, we'll talk about this when we get to the spoilers part, I suppose.
Yes. Christoph Waltz plays Count Volpe, the puppet master.
Mm-hmm.
who is I think he does a good job.
Yeah, he was scary.
Yeah. Tilda Swinton plays the movie's version of the Blue Fairy.
Yeah.
I was confused. She actually plays both versions of the fairy.
Okay.
Because Kate Blanchett plays the monkey.
Oh.
Kate Blanchett plays Spazzatura, the Count Volpe's monkey, who Count Volpe and Spazzatura replace the fox and the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just sort of like roll those characters into the puppet master and his assistant monkey. But yeah, Kate Blanchett plays that. What a weird role for her.
It was a good, she did a good job.
Yeah. We have John Turturro as the town doctor and Bern Gorman as the priest. Bern Gorman, who we last saw in Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron Perlman, Hellboy himself, as the father of Finn Wolfhard's Candlewick.
Oh, that's why I recognize the father's voice. Okay,
yeah,
makes sense.
Very low, very stern. And Tim Blake Nelson as the rabbits, who we will get to.
Finn Wolfhard did a good job in this.
Yeah, I didn't recognize his voice. I mean,
neither did I.
Who knows when these were recorded? But yeah, so Candlewick, also known as Lampwick, if you're familiar with the Disney version, is a major character in Pinocchio. Very different character in this movie, though.
This movie is very different from Pinocchio, which we'll talk about soon.
So, you know, our overall thoughts on it, we both liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Both recommend it.
Yeah. Don't bring your, like, six-year-old to it.
Don't bring your little kids to it. They might be scared and or bored. But just everything, just a beautiful movie.
Oh, yeah. Everything about this movie was, like, perfectly put together.
Yeah. And it had the Henson Company had a hand in this, which I don't think I realized. I'm not sure. Lisa Henson is one of the producers on it. I'm not sure how the Henson Company got involved, but, you know, glad they did if it helped it get it made.
Mm-hmm.
And Alexander Desplat, I don't know how you say his last name, did the score. You know, he's a great.
I know that you didn't like the lyrics of the music as much as I did.
I had issues with the songs. I didn't think they were the strongest part of the movie, but they didn't undo it for me.
No,
they didn't ruin it. I wasn't that impressed with them. But then I'm very picky when it comes to songs in musicals. And the music was just beautiful, gorgeous.
Oh, yeah,
gorgeous. That's our spoiler-free review.
Go see the movie,
Pinocchio.
And then come back to this episode.
Go see it, because now, starting now, we are entering spoiler territory, where we will talk about what actually happens in Pinocchio.
Yep.
Ready?
Spoiler alert. Spoilers, spoilers. If you get spoiled past this point, it's your fault.
Okay. Your fault. Here we go, starting now. So, fascism. This isn't a Guillermo del Toro movie.
Yep.
It's about fascism.
Fascism.
The fascists... There was a movie that came out a few years back about the Nutcracker.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, they decided to set it in like a mythical fascist kingdom with like Nazi imagery and Nutcrackers. And it did not work. Didn't work. Bad choice.
Trying to set like a romantic tale. It can work.
Yeah, it can
really
work.
For the Nutcracker.
This movie is set post-World War I, pre-World mm-hmm. War II, in fascist Italy. Very, like, explicitly, because we literally see Mussolini as a character. Like, he is in this movie. Here comes the moose.
Guillermo del Toro didn't want anyone to be able to be like, you're just reading into it that it's about fascism.
Well, okay. So, right off the bat, the first, 15 minutes of this movie is backstory.
Yeah. And it's like, you know the movie Up?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know the movie Up. It's like the first, like... section of that movie.
Yeah, because we start with Jiminy Cricket, I keep saying that, Sebastian J. Cricket narrating,
mm-hmm.
and he immediately says, he shows us Geppetto weeping at the grave of his dead son.
Yep.
This is where the movie initially lost me, because I was like, I don't need a backstory on Geppetto. I don't need to know why he makes a puppet. I don't need a dead boy. You can just make a puppet. Don't worry, it justifies this.
Yes.
But it lost me initially. I was like, oh, God, I don't need a weird backstory for Geppetto. I don't need him to be mourning a son.
On the other hand, for me, I was like, yes, give me the dead boy backstory. I want to know more about Geppetto.
Because originally, because remember, in the original book, Geppetto just makes a puppet. because he's a puppet maker, and he gets a piece of cursed wood, essentially, that's already alive and talking. And then he carves a leg into it, and it kicks him, and he carves a face into it, and it's like, F you. And then he's like, what a bad boy. Like, that's how Pinocchio begins.
I've never read the book, so I'm just going based off of the Disney movie.
Yeah.
I wanted to know more about Geppetto because the movie doesn't expand. Like, the Disney movie doesn't do anything with Geppetto, really.
Yeah. Disney movie, Geppetto makes the puppet, and then he's like, he wishes on a star that he had a real son. And that's what happens. The blue fairy comes down and gives Pinocchio life. And Geppetto's an old man. You just sort of feel like, oh, this guy's never had a family.
Yeah, I don't care about that. Give me the tragedy.
But we don't know what happened to his son is named Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
I assume as a tribute to Carlo Collodi. We don't know what happened to the mom.
We get some like implications.
Right.
I think she died and like she seems sick or something, as people did back then.
He killed her.
Yep. Axe murder.
Yeah, he killed her. She's buried. She's buried in the tree. No. But he's a very old man already.
Mm-hmm.
He's no spring chicken.
Yeah.
So good for you, Geppetto.
There's also like an implication that she left, because we never, like, you'd think that he would have buried his son with his mother or with her son.
Yeah, we don't see a mom's grave. Maybe they live somewhere else. Who knows? Maybe she died a long time ago. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But he has this boy, Carlo. We get to see a lot of them just being cool together.
Yeah.
But we find out, because we find out early on that we already know that Carlo's going to die because we see him at the grave.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, God, there's going to be some like montage. And then one day the cricket will say like, but then Carlo got sick or something. But no. What happens to Carlo?
He gets a bomb dropped on him.
He gets a bomb dropped on him. How, like, when you say a bomb dropped on him, do you mean, like, in the vicinity?
No.
How, where does the bomb hit Carlo?
On the head.
I mean, we assume. Yeah. We don't actually see it enter his head.
What's happening, basically, is Geppetto and Carlo have been going to set up this crucifix carving that Geppetto's done.
Working on in the church.
Yeah. And they stay late to finish up, and as they're finishing up, Geppetto hears rumbling and is like, we should get going, and they leave, but Carlo's dropped his pine cone.
Carlo has
the perfect pine cone. He goes back to get it, bomb falls on the church and kills Carlo.
Right, because it's, and the planes are flying back. I believe it's Italian planes, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They're flying back to base, and they just randomly drop bombs just to balance out the planes for ballast.
Yeah, which is
the
a
worst.
Terrible idea.
But, you know, fascist Italy. So they don't care what's below them.
Was it Italian planes? Because I think the exact like line that was said was Geppetto's little village wasn't even a target. The planes were just flying back and they unloaded the bombs.
Who knows?
They were planes and they were dropping bombs.
And they're dropping bombs for no reason. The bomb drops on the church, kills Carlo, blows the arm off of Jesus. And
yes, that does happen.
That's how it begins. And he buries Carlo's lucky pine cone. And it grows into a tree. And
you thought that he was bearing the pine cone because that's all that was left of his son.
I was like, is that all that was left of the boy? Like, he only has a pine cone to bury? You were like, no, he actually has a grave. And I was like, okay, but we don't know that. I mean, for all we know, he could have buried, like, his, like, toe in there, the end. But in any case.
I thought Jesus fell on top of Carlo.
That is why. Okay. So if you've ever been like, I love the story of Pinocchio, I watch all the Pinocchios, but what I really want to see is Geppetto get drunk and in a drunken fury, angrily carve a puppet boy and then fall down a flight of stairs and pass out. This is the movie for you, because that is exactly what it is. He carves Pinocchio in a rage, and
yep.
I love it. It's horrible to watch.
Mm-hmm. Sebastian J. Cricket's commentary is quality, though.
Because he cuts down the Pinocchio, the Carlo tree to make it.
Yeah, because it's been a bajillion years since.
Yeah, it's been like 10 years or so. Because I believe his boy died like during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like the eve of World War II.
Yeah.
And the cricket is living inside the tree and he cuts it down.
He's just moved in. He's going to write a manuscript because he's a sentient cricket.
Yeah, he want to write about his life. He gets chopped down. But because he gets chopped down, he claims the puppet as his own. He claims, mm-hmm. He's like, I still live here. This is still my home. So I get to live in the puppet. Meanwhile, floating eyeballs.
Floating eyeballs are watching Geppetto.
And I'm going to tell you right off the bat, because we don't want this to go on forever, we're not going to cover every facet of the story.
No.
I just wanted to cover like the sort of basic setup here. And then we'll touch on some points. But yeah, there's floating eyeballs in the woods.
Yep.
How many floating eyeballs?
A lot.
Yes. The floating eyeballs come to Geppetto's shop while Geppetto is passed out at the foot of the flight of stairs. And what do they turn into?
An angel from the Bible.
From the Bible. A biblical angel. It's a wood sprite. She calls herself a wood sprite, voiced by Tilda Swinton. It's an amazing, obviously, Guillermo del Toro creature with eyes in its wings, wearing a frightening blank-faced mask. So you never hear it, see its face. You only hear its voice. Yada, yada, yada. Much like Disney's Pinocchio, it's blue also. The wood sprite gives Pinocchio life, says that the cricket gets to continue living inside it, be its heart, to guide. And she tells the cricket, if you guide the puppet along the way, if you guide Pinocchio along his way, and he stays good, he becomes a good and true boy, then I will give you one wish. And the cricket's like, great, I want my novel to be published, whatever.
Yeah, which mood.
Right. So let's sort of skip ahead. It sort of sticks to the Disney formula at this point. Pinocchio is supposed to go to school. He gets distracted.
There's one thing we cannot skip ahead.
What do we got to stick? What do we got to do?
The introduction of Pinocchio as a living creature.
Right. So Geppetto wakes up. His puppet is missing. He's hungover. He hears a noise in the attic, like a scrabbling and a scrambling.
Yep.
How do they introduce Pinocchio?
Like a demon.
Yes. Like some kind of wooden goblin.
And he's all Samara from The Ring, moving and twitching around.
He's walking all twitchy. He's walking on all fours, but like backwards, and like he's figuring out how his limbs work.
Yeah.
And he straightens up, but in this like... It's terrifying.
It's terrifying.
But believable.
I was expecting the people behind us to leave after that.
At that point, yes. But it's believable. Like, you believe, like, oh, it's not overindulgent. It's like you're like, oh, what would a creature that does not know how its body works do? It would, like, be, like, figuring it all out. And then, like, it sees Geppetto, and it's like, oh, these are my legs. These are my arms.
Mm-hmm.
I got a head.
Yeah.
And if you've not seen the poster, if you've not seen any pictures, Pinocchio looks like he was hastily carved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was never finished.
Yeah, he never wears clothes through the whole movie. He's just got this body with a hole, like a knot hole where his heart would be. And that's where the cricket rides.
Skipping ahead now, though.
Yeah, skipping ahead now. Geppetto's like, there is a... John Turturro plays Il Dottore, who is... Sorry. Ron Perlman plays Podesta. I have my notes here. They're all over the place. Ron Perlman plays Podesta, who is a government official who is part of the fascist government. You see a lot of fascist salutes, which look like Nazi salutes. Just so you know, like, he is there. He's present through this whole thing. And Pinocchio is supposed to go to school, but he gets distracted by the monkey that leads him to the puppet show, where you have a very Disney-esque "I Got No Strings" sequence, where
he also signs a contract.
Yep, he signs a contract with a smiley son that he's going to be part of this troupe, but Geppetto comes and rescues him.
Mm-hmm.
However, Pinocchio also shows up at church. This is a very, like, there's a lot of religion in the beginning of this movie.
Yeah.
Even though Guillermo del Toro is very critical of the church, it's shown as, like, the center of Italian life. And, like, you see them crossing themselves. They're very Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And Pinocchio shows up. The town is like, it's a demon. It's a demon. It's a demon. But Podesta, the Ron Perlman character, sees in this boy, like, the potential for a soldier, like, basically a super soldier.
Yeah.
Because it's like this, like, weird, like, he's like, if he's going to be a true Italian boy, he's got to, like, go to, like, whatever they call it, like, youth brigade or whatever.
Youth camp.
Yeah, and become, like, a real, like, fascist soldier.
Mm-hmm.
His son is Candlewick.
Yeah.
Who is a bully originally.
Yeah.
And what does he do to Pinocchio?
He sets him on fire, convinces him to set him on fire.
How does he convince himself to set himself on fire, though? This is interesting.
He says, he turns to Pinocchio and says, you should put your feet in the fire to feel warm.
With the hot, first they're drinking hot cocoa together.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it'll make you as warm as hot chocolate. Yeah. And that's kind of a recurring thing, is that Pinocchio is obsessed with drinking hot chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
So Pinocchio puts his feet in the fire and they burn off.
So
that is what happens in the book, though. I wanted to point that out.
Okay.
Pinocchio's feet burning off happens earlier in the book, and he does it just because he falls asleep in front of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the lessons he has to learn is that he is flammable, and that's dangerous. And I was happy that they kind of paid tribute to that moment with having his feet burned off.
We've established that Pinocchio can taste and feel.
Yes.
Which is horrifying.
But it's also important because, as Guillermo del Toro says in interviews, the point of this Pinocchio, he says, I'm just going to read this quote. He says, in the standard story, Pinocchio has to be a good boy and learn his lessons, and then he becomes a real boy. And they were saying, well, wait a minute, how do you learn to be yourself? How do you learn to be real? You learn by questioning. And that seemed a really interesting idea to me and a reason to tell the story again in a completely different way. This isn't a story about Pinocchio trying to be good, even though it presents itself about like that way. It's about Pinocchio already being a real boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think like the fact that he can taste and feel is like, no, he is a real kid. Like, this is a real person. Because this movie is very much about like Pinocchio is perfect the way he is. Everyone else has to change around him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I mean, he turns a lot of things on their head in this adaptation. But
which, it's horrifying to me because of everything that happens to Pinocchio afterwards.
Right. But it's beautiful because, I mean, as mixed as my feelings are about the way Guillermo del Toro approaches the concept of monsters and monstrousness, mm-hmm. I think he fetishizes it a little bit too much for my like comfort.
Mm-hmm.
He also has that thing of like, there is nothing wrong with having a body that is not like other people's bodies.
Yeah.
Like that just like, and again, I think to Del Toro's weirdness, sometimes I think he thinks it makes you like more fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but he also has just like, no, you are perfect the way you are.
Yeah.
Like the world needs people whose bodies are different and whose thoughts are different. And so of course he would be like, no, Pinocchio is a perfect child.
Yeah.
And he doesn't misbehave. He just doesn't understand the way the world works.
Yeah. And I think we've seen that in some of the like movies on the ecstasy of influence.
Uh-huh.
Because there's a lot of like, for me at least, there was a lot of reminiscence of Cria Cuervos.
Yes.
And like Spirit of the Beehive and stuff in this movie.
You're dead on. You're dead on with that. I would put this movie on like if you were like a film festival of similar mm-hmm. films. Yes. Spirit of the Beehive. What's the one we watched? The movie about all the street kids. Oh, God.
Oh, what was it called? I know what you're talking about.
Yes, it was all the street kids, and it was just basically about life on the streets. Oh, my gosh, it's going to bother me. I'm not going to look it up right now, but it fits with that in that mm-hmm. milieu. Like, this is about kids being kids, and they are innocent.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, fascism.
Holy fascism.
Holy fascism. So things start changing around the time Pinocchio gets taken away by the puppet company.
Yeah, after he gets killed.
Right. So a few things. The puppet master is like, Pinocchio signed a contract. You're going to owe me like 10,000 lira if you don't let me take the mm-hmm. boy back. The fascist leader says this boy needs to be in the army because why?
He's immortal.
How do we learn that?
He dies and then he comes back.
How does he die?
He gets hit by a car.
Yep. Geppetto and the puppet master are yanking Pinocchio back and forth. He flies out of Geppetto's hands into an oncoming truck, gets smashed, and literally dies.
Yep. His soul goes to the underworld.
This is where Guillermo del Toro steps in.
Yep.
Like, really steps in. In the book Pinocchio, quote-unquote, dies. There's a funeral scene after he gets hung from a tree. He gets cut down, and his pallbearers are rabbits, and he gets mm-hmm. taken to a house of the Blue Fairy, who nurses him back to health. He's not really dead because he's a puppet and he's not really alive, but they treat him as if he's dead to kind of teach him a lesson.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talking animals in that scene. Guillermo del Toro takes that and runs with it.
Mm-hmm.
Pinocchio actually dies, goes to the underworld where there are skeleton rabbits that bear bear him in a coffin, and then the rabbits just sit around playing cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Pinocchio is supposed to stay in his coffin and just not bother anybody.
But he can't because he's alive.
Right. Because what's the problem?
He broke the Blue Fairy broke the rules and put a soul into a hunk of wood. But he's not alive because he's as alive as a chair, I think is what was said.
Right. So there's another fairy,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like what happens in the book. The blue fairy show, or the fairy with the blue hair, as they sometimes call her, shows up numerous times, but as a different character. Like, mm-hmm. she looks different, she behaves differently, so she may as well be different characters. And this version is the wood sprite's sister, who is just death, basically.
Yeah.
The spirit of death, who rules the underworld, is another beautiful blue creature.
She's awesome.
Yeah. Because she's like, yeah, you are not supposed to be alive. You are just wood. You're supposed to be like, you're not supposed to be alive any more than like, yeah, any chair or table that's supposed to be. Very reminiscent of the sawhorse in the Oz books, who is accidentally given life by Dorothy or by Pip and told repeatedly by all the other characters, you're not supposed to be alive.
Yeah.
Which isn't a fair thing to say to any creature, but that's the Oz books.
But to speed along a little bit, the rule is basically if he dies, he gets stuck there for a short amount of time, but it gets longer each time he dies.
Right. But because he's not a real living creature, he can't stay in the underworld.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, every time he dies, she turns over an hourglass.
Mm-hmm.
But the hourglasses, you see them lined up. They're getting progressively bigger.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a curse to Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. Because eventually he'll be stuck down there so long that everyone he knows on the face of the earth will be gone when he gets back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she says what lends living beings, especially human beings, like meaning is the fact they don't live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so Pinocchio now knows that he can get killed, however, and he'll always come back.
Which is the lesson he learns from that, and he uses it.
But he also, whenever he comes back, he's damaged more and more.
Yeah.
Because he always dies a violent death.
Yep. But he goes to the circus.
Yep.
We get to see an old morality play, basically.
Uh-huh.
A fascist youth play.
Yeah, propaganda play for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
The monkey starts getting jealous of Pinocchio and tells him that the puppet master isn't, as he promised, sending half of the money to Geppetto. He's just keeping it for himself.
Yeah.
The monkey gets beaten for telling Pinocchio this.
Also, the monkey can talk.
But only when?
Using puppets.
Exactly. It's crazy. And it's such a great character beat. Like, when you realize... Yep. The person voicing the puppets is the monkey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it.
And Pinocchio steps in to protect the monkey and gets hit. Not hit. He doesn't get hit, but he gets yelled at, and like the puppet leader master guy is very mean.
Yes. So the way that Count Volpe treats Pinocchio is interesting, because it's that thing where it's like he's incredibly violent and abusive to everyone but Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the way abusers work.
Yep.
As you pointed out, you were like, you know, this is... And you were happy with what happens with the monkey, and explain why.
Because the monkey is redeemed, and the monkey sort of starts off as a villain.
Yeah.
But they don't demonize the victims of abuse who have been doing the things that they're doing to survive.
Right.
They allow them to be redeemed.
Yes. It's one of those Guillermo del Toro things. Children, and I consider the monkey basically a child character.
Mm-hmm.
Children who are abused are never the villains. Like, no matter what they do. And that holds with Candlewick. Because his father abuses him emotionally.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
jumping ahead, we don't get the island of the fantasy land that Pinocchio tends to go to, like where all the kids can do whatever they want, and they turn into donkeys.
This is when it's the most obvious, I think, that this movie is flipping the moral lesson of Pinocchio on its head.
Oh, yeah. Because where does he go instead?
He goes to the youth camp.
Yes.
It's a very impactful segment.
Yeah. And this is where he becomes friends with Candlewick.
Yeah, they talk at night about stuff, and Pinocchio repeats a lesson that Sebastian J. Cricket told him about, like, how sometimes dads say things that they think they mean, and then later on they realize they never meant them at all.
Yeah, because Geppetto yells at Pinocchio that he's a burden at one point, and Pinocchio has to ask what a burden is, and the only thing he's known about... Oh, because he was told that his son's death was a burden.
Mm-hmm.
So Geppetto basically tells Pinocchio, you're as much of a burden as the death of my child. Like, you are compounding that pain. And what a horrible thing to say to a kid. But also, as the cricket says, like you said, like, parents sometimes say horrible things that they don't mean just because they're upset. And yeah, so he bonds with Candlewick over this. They have to do an obstacle course. He and it's Candlewick
reverse capture the flag, basically. Yeah,
it's replace the flag. He and Candlewick tie at the end and decide to fly their flags together. Ron Perlman is not happy with this, and to prove that he's a real Italian man, Candlewick is handed a gun and told to shoot Pinocchio.
Yep.
Well, shoot Pinocchio then. And Candlewick refuses to do it. But before Ron Perlman can do anything, they are bombed.
Yeah. He gets shot in the face with a paintball gun.
Yeah, they do shoot Ron Perlman in the face with a paintball gun.
And then he gets a bomb dropped on his head, too.
Yeah, the school gets bombed. He gets bombed directly. Pinocchio gets blasted into the ocean along with the monkey.
Not into the ocean, onto a cliff.
Onto a cliff.
We cannot skip the scene that happens after this.
Oh, right! Because...
Pinocchio gets burned at the stake.
But first it looks like he's been...
crucified.
Right, because first you see Pinocchio on a wooden cross.
Yep.
And I was just like, it's going places. And then it pulls out and he's on a cross, but...
They're going to set him on fire.
They're going to set him on fire. And this is the us just flashing back to every movie we watched in the Ecstasy of Influence where someone gets set on fire in a pyre.
Yep.
What were they?
Black Sunday.
Yep.
The witches, or the devils.
The devils.
The seventh seal.
Yep.
There's been other ones.
Yeah. We watch a lot of burning at the stake in our Ecstasy of Influence, and who knew that this was going to be one of them? But Pinocchio is saved.
By the monkey.
By the monkey. That's when they fall into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably at that point, the puppet master is killed. By
yep.
the exploding school falling on
well,
him.
Well, we see him land on the rocks.
Oh, that's right!
Yeah.
He doesn't get killed by anything other than getting smashed on the rocks in a brutal moment. His body hits the rocks. It doesn't linger on it. It's the camera is panning down into the water, and he's just like, gah! And then, like, you're in the water.
Mm-hmm.
By this point, Geppetto has already been swallowed by the dogfish, which is the dogfish like it is in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It looks nothing like a dogfish. It looks like a nightmare with, as I said, prolapsed anuses sticking out of its head, which is what they are. Prolapsed anuses. And Pinocchio and the... Pinocchio and the monkey get swallowed. They find Geppetto. They love each other very much. Pinocchio makes his nose grow, which has happened several times in the story, intentionally to grow a tree up to the blowhole. Everyone runs up, yada yada. There's a huge action sequence where they have to get out of the blowhole. Pinocchio falls.
Geppetto also falls.
They get sneezed out of the blowhole. The blowhole. Then the monster tries to eat them. There's all these mines in the water that we've seen before.
Yeah.
For boats. Pinocchio gets strapped to one. He ends up getting swallowed again by the whale, but it's the chain on the mine is attached to the whale's tooth. Pinocchio gets it loose. The whale blows up, but Pinocchio gets blown up with him.
Mm-hmm. And this is bad because Geppetto, the monkey, and Sebastian J. Cricket are all drowning.
Right. Pinocchio goes back to the afterlife, and what happens?
He needs to go back immediately, and the death is basically like, I told you, you can't do that. But if you break the rules, you can.
Right, because he's supposed to wait for the thing to be done.
You will become a real boy.
Yeah.
And you will actually die. You will not be able to come back.
Yeah.
And he says, fine, smashes the hourglass, goes back in a harrowing scene of trying to save Geppetto.
Yep, it takes a while.
Because he's missing an arm.
Right, because by this point, he's blown up.
Yeah, and so he's trying to keep Geppetto's head above the water. It's not going very well, but he manages to get Geppetto to shore.
Right, and he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pinocchio dies on the shore. Actually dies.
Mm-hmm.
Geppetto is weeping over his son's body. Like, this guy's been through it.
Yeah.
Geppetto has been through it.
Yeah, he's been on an adventure of a lifetime.
The original wood sprite comes back. They beg the wood sprite, please bring him back to life. The wood sprite's like, look, I wasn't supposed to do that in the first place.
There's a really good line, though, that I want to comment on.
What is the line?
So the sprite says, I just wanted to bring you joy. And Geppetto goes, you did. You brought me horrible, terrible joy.
Yes.
And it was, that's when I started crying at that scene.
Yeah. And but the spirit is like, I can't do this again. Like, I'm already in trouble.
And then Sebastian J. Cricket's like, hang on a second.
Yep.
You owe me a wish.
Yes.
And he wishes for Pinocchio to come back.
And it works. He comes back and they live all happily ever after?
No.
Oh, really? Why not?
Because they all die, except for Pinocchio.
Because if the movie is about anything, it's about the fact that life has no meaning if you aren't doomed to die. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like a John Irving novel, we are going to follow these characters to the bitter end. Who dies first?
Geppetto.
Obviously. The guy is ancient.
The guy's ancient. He's gotten swallowed by a dogfish.
Yeah.
He has had to... He's nearly drowned. Like...
He dies in bed with Pinocchio there.
Mm-hmm.
Who dies next?
Sebastian J. Cricket.
Who's the narrator? But he's like...
Sebastian,
and then he's like, one day Pinocchio found me on the windowsill and I wasn't moving. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Pinocchio buries him next to Geppetto. They're all on the same hill.
He keeps him in a matchbox.
That's right. Oh my God, I forgot about that. Puts his corpse in a matchbox and puts him inside his body so he'll always be his heart.
Yeah.
Who dies next?
The monkey.
He buries him on the hill. You don't even hear about it. We just see him at the grave.
Yep.
Pinocchio's a real boy. He's mortal now, but he doesn't age.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's time for him to just head off into the world. And what's interesting is every time, the two times he came to life, the fairy said, you will be given life. You will travel the world, basically.
Yeah.
And through the whole movie, he doesn't travel the world. He goes with he goes a little bit. He travels a little bit with the puppet thing. Now his life is beginning.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild. You're like, oh, wow. Like he had to fully become real. And in order to fully become real, he had to experience grief and loss, which he does. And the arc words of the story, the phrase that returns at the end, is a phrase that gets said a couple of times in the movie, which is, how does it go? What happens, happens, and then you're gone.
Yeah.
And that is the most moving thing I've heard in a movie in a while. Like,
especially in Ewan McGregor's voice.
What happens? I don't know if we're getting the quote quite right, but it's basically that. What happens, happens, and then you're gone. Which is how better to sum up life?
Yeah.
Like, what is life? Stuff happens and then you're not here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this movie is about. Also, it's about fascism.
Also, it's about... how in trying to turn kids into machines that obey is not good for them, and they should be allowed to be free.
Also, it is about how the truest victims of war are the children.
Mm-hmm.
Even the man who loses his son, the child was more of the victim because the child is gone and cannot live again. Also, Pinocchio is not trying to be a real boy. Pinocchio is trying to be Carlo through the whole movie. Geppetto has basically said, like, I want you to be Carlo again. Pinocchio learns, I cannot be your son.
Yeah.
I can only be me. Wow. Like, what a thing. For an animated motion picture to have in it. Like, basically telling a still grieving parent, your child is gone. You need to honor the fact that your child lived their life. This new child cannot be that child anymore. You need to let this child be what a child is, which is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and you know what this movie also did? It had an adult apologize to a kid.
Yes, because what does Geppetto do?
He apologizes and he accepts Pinocchio for being Pinocchio.
For
he
being says, Pinocchio.
You should just be Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Be Pinocchio. Be
and he
Pinocchio.
Says he loves him.
Yes, and calls him his son.
Because mm-hmm.
Pinocchio is calling him Papa throughout the whole movie, but Geppetto will not call him my son.
Yeah.
It's about fascism. It's about how fascism ruins everything. It's about how people just sort of go along with it because they have nothing else. It's about the choices we make in life. Some Del Toroisms that we discovered.
Hand trauma.
I was like, there's no hand trauma in this. And you said?
We get to see his fingers get cut.
Yep. He makes Pinocchio's fingers. One's too long. You see him take the shears and just clip off the end of a finger.
Yep.
Hand trauma. Descent into the underworld.
Descent into Ron Perlman.
Well, I was going to say, we get two descents into the underworld.
We get the dogfish and the underworld.
And what's funny is I think I was saying, like, the dogfish is more of an underworld than the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
Because the underworld has its own rules that Pinocchio's really not a part of. The dogfish, though, is everyone's stuck in the dogfish.
everyone's stuck in the dogfish.
And you have to go up through the tunnel out to the light. Like, that's more of a leaving the underworld than leaving the underworld is.
Yep.
We get Guillermo del Toro has obviously created a mythology that we are only getting part of.
Which is awesome. It doesn't feel like it's like, it doesn't feel like we need more than we got, though.
Right. It doesn't feel like Lot 36. It feels like, we are privy to enough to kind of fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a non-Christian mythology with
overlaid with heavy Christian imagery.
With wood spirits and a wild underworld ruled by rabbits and these beautiful blue creatures who are like the sprites and made up of eyes. And yeah, it's its own thing. It fits perfectly in with Pan's Labyrinth.
And Hellboy.
And Hellboy. But yeah, but it has that like, who's the pale man? What's with this giant frog? You will never find out. You'll never know. Yeah. But that doesn't matter because it's part of a coherent narrative. And I will say, if you ever want to know what's going on with the pale man and all them, read the novel of Pan's Labyrinth that Guillermo del Toro wrote. It fills in all those answers, but not in a dissatisfying way.
I just want to talk to Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah. were there any other del Toroisms besides every one of them?
Let's see.
Oh, death to a child?
Death to a child. We had the father. I think Candlewick and his father were very much a del Toroism.
Yes.
Very reminiscent of Pan's Labyrinth.
The fascist military leader who's cruel to his children. But the wise old father, much like Kronos, much like every Hellboy, all those.
The wise old father who messes up.
Who messes up.
And places the burden of his mistakes on his kids.
Yes. So beautiful. This was a quintessential Guillermo del Toro movie.
Yeah.
Clockwork?
Clockwork. You didn't agree with the clockwork thing, so I wasn't going to bring it up, but I think that there was clockwork in this one.
Because there's clocks.
Yeah. Well, there's clocks, and we get to see the cuckoo bird come out of the thing.
We do see the cuckoo bird. A little tribute. A little morsel.
Yeah. And there's that part in the beginning with Carlo where he makes, like, the pig, like, and the levers the pig is eating out of the thing for the shop when he's...
Oh, you're right. I'll give it to you.
Thank you.
We got clockwork. No vampires.
No
vampires, but Frankenstein.
We do have Frankenstein.
The creation of Pinocchio is very much a Frankenstein story. And the way Geppetto treats him is very much the rejection of the creature. And the way the town responds to him initially is, what is this creature? So yes, we get our Frankenstein story.
We do. We also get Pinocchio asking why people like Jesus and not
him. Yeah, there's a scene where he points up to the wooden crucifix and he's like, he's made out of wood. I'm made out of wood. Everyone loves him, but nobody loves me. Why? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, are we going to get Geppetto explaining Jesus Christ to a little wooden boy? It does not. He avoids the question.
He says, I can't do this right now.
Yeah. He's like, oh my God, just please. We're not going to explain Catholicism to a child in this Pinocchio movie.
Yeah.
The family left a little after the moment where the school blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Like right when they arrived in the belly of the dogfish.
Which is a weird place for them to lead because I feel like the rest of it's just more like I feel like it goes up from there.
Yeah, but I think maybe that was just the point where they were like, you know what? I think we're done. I think we've had it. But yeah, so this is hitting Netflix in a little over a week. And I would say if you haven't had a chance to see it in the theater, December 9th. If you haven't had a chance to see it in the theater,
please go see it.
Please go see it. But if you don't get a chance, definitely check it out on Netflix. I would like Guillermo del Toro to have more opportunities like this.
Yes.
It's getting great reviews.
It was awesome.
Yeah. People just love it. People just love it. So critics are loving it more than audiences, but I think it's just I think that'll balance out once people kind of get into the groove of it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I said I was put off by the fact, like, by it at the beginning. But once I realized they weren't going to shy away from Geppetto's anger and grief, then I was like, okay, this is all justified.
I think the marketing for this was a bit rough.
Yeah. But how do you sell this?
Yeah. It's just, I think they push too much for kids when that's not the audience.
Yeah.
I also just think, current, popular view on animation is very much still leaning towards animation is for kids.
Right.
And can only be used to tell kids stories, but it's not.
Yeah, yeah. And Del Toro says that. He has said numerous times, this is not a movie for... He says, look, this is going to be of a piece with Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
It's not a movie made for kids. It's a movie that can be watched by the family. So that's like, I think, the distinction there. Like, watch it with your kids, but watch it with your kids.
Yeah. It, like, talk to your kids while watching it.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is a conversation for kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Pinocchio. Little Wooden Boy.
What?
Little Wooden Boy.
Little Wooden Boy.
Little Wooden Boy. Check it out.
Check it out.
Check it out.
It was very good. It's beautiful. It's well acted. I loved the songs. There's a poop fart song in it.
There's a poop fart song. There's a poop fart song. So we won't explain it. If you've seen it, you've seen it. There's a poop yep. fart song. But yeah, Pinocchio. Next up, Defending Your Life. Another
comedy.
Movie about the afterlife, as you said in the theater.
Yep. A comedy.
We'll get to see a comedy about the afterlife next. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us at deltorotime.wordpress.com. You can find us on Twitter while Twitter still exists. Go to our Facebook page and like it. I post updates there as well. Listen to Deep in Bear Country. Listen to Pizza Toast. And
are we gonna get any of those Twitter replacements? Are we gonna get an account set up on any of those?
I'm looking at them. We'll see what happens.
We'll let you know if it happens. If I want to, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. If it happens, we'll let everyone know.
Mm-hmm.
And until next time, I am Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when it's Del Toro time.
Living the dream.
Solid.